So hello, everybody. Our guests today on the Forest Call are Ali, Atma, and Andreas. They're brothers, they're friends, but mostly they're mentors who are young males themselves, and they serve as a role model presence for the young people in Baltimore. The story of these three men really embodies the principle of Gandhiji's famous quote, "Be the change you wish to see in the world." Once they graduated from college, they all knew that they saw something wrong with the world, but Andreas said, "So what are we going to do about it?" And they knew that they were going to do something about it. So in 2002, they started the Holistic Life Foundation, which is a foundation that hosts beautiful programs for young people and children, programs that bring yoga, meditation, mindfulness, homework assistance, community service with community cleanups, vegetable gardening, field trips to historical sites and museums. It's just amazing, the host of things that the Holistic Life Foundation cultivates in the community to really nurture the spirits of the young people in communities like Baltimore. One of the quotes that I saw on their website that just put a smile on my face is written by a young student in Virginia, and he said, "This morning I got mad at my dad, but then I remembered to breathe, and then I didn't shout. I really wish you guys could stay longer and teach us more exercises." So right from the words of some of the young people that have been impacted by the beautiful work that Ali, Atma, and Andreas do, we're so excited to have you guys on the Forest Call tonight. Oh, today. Welcome. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
So, Kunjin, should we jump into the Q&A from here?
Yeah, go ahead.
Excellent. So thank you again for joining the call, brothers. And I guess we can begin with just hearing from you guys about your journey. It seems like the way that you grew up and the three of you guys coming together has really impacted the vision of Holistic Life and sort of the journey that this institution has taken. So if you can just share a little bit about us, you know, how this came about from your own childhood, I'd love to hear that.
All right, well, this is Ali. Atman and I are brothers, and we grew up in West Baltimore, pretty famous for the HBO show The Wire. It depicts a lot of the struggles and strifes the communities are dealing with violence and drugs and crime. But that's kind of present day. Back when we grew up there, it was a lot more of a community vibe there. Like, the neighbors looked out for each other, and it was just like a big family. We grew up a little bit different than most of our peers because our parents were yogis, and they were really into like meditation and pranayama and yoga practice. They went to all types of ashrams around the area, and they even had us growing up in a self-realization fellowship church. So, I mean, church started with meditation and readings from all different types of scriptures. So it was just and also they had us in a Quaker school. Which, you know, I mean, they have a mindfulness practice there through meeting for worship. So, I mean, we grew up with yoga and mindfulness and meditation in our lives. Our dad would have us meditating before school every morning. It was just something that was, they planted that seed, and it kind of grew into help inspire the work that we're doing today. When our parents got divorced, we kind of got out of our practice some. And, you know, I mean, just experienced life and went to college. And both of us went to the University of Maryland College Park and actually met Andy or Andres out partying, really. I mean, it's part of college experience. We were out partying and we met him and we started talking and saw we had a lot of the same interests. So our partying kind of turned into like a book club where we would read books on spirituality and ancient history and religion and philosophy and anything we get our hands on, we were sharing the things that we read. And then through our studies, we just kind of saw a lot of problems that we thought could be fixed in the world, and a lot of suffering that was going on that was unnecessary. So we decided that we were going to try to do something about it.
Atman, Andy, feel free to share.
Sure. Like Ali was saying, we saw a lot of problems in the world, and we knew that we wanted to do something to, I guess, kind of assist in kind of like getting rid of the suffering that a lot of people were facing in the world. And, you know, during that time, like Ali was saying, we got back into our own yoga practice and we kind of saw how much stress and, you know, chaos that the meditation, the pranayama, and the asanas was bringing to our lives. So we kind of saw how it calmed us down and made us have a lot more hope, I guess, as far as society and life, where we knew that we had to teach it to other people. And, you know, the like when we graduated from college, we kind of saw our neighborhood kind of going down. It kind of reminded me of the Wild West because, you know, you really couldn't look people in the eyes. Like, if you did, you had to be ready, you know, to fight or, you know, do something like that. You know, there were open-air drug markets, boarded-up houses everywhere. And, you know, the whole neighborhood feeling wasn't there anymore. You know, that's why people call our communities hoods because, you know, the neighbors don't live there anymore. You know, no one knows each other. It's no community support. And, you know, through the work that we've been doing through the youth that live in our community, we have seen our neighborhood go from a hood to a neighborhood. And, you know, the community, the sense of community is coming back, which was lacking, and which is one of the main reasons why we started doing the work that we were doing. Because, you know, we know how much it meant to us to have the support of our parents, people, older people in our neighborhood, and, you know, family, friends, where we knew that if we, you know, we supported other people the same way that people supported us, that's like the ingredients to success. So, you know, honestly, we're just doing work that we knew that we had to do.
Yeah, they both basically, you know, touched on all the points that I would. I think, you know, the similar thing that went through all of our minds is we were all doing our own personal practice. We were going internal and inside, and when we would come out of our meditative practices and we'd see the outside world, we would see, like you all said too, that, you know, that there's just something that wasn't right, and we were hoping to instill our practice into others at an early age, and I think that's what kind of pushed us to do what we're doing.
Very inspiring. Yeah, thank you. It sounds like you guys are paying forward the benefits of meditation and yoga that you received in your own life. A question that I had is, why do you perceive that neighborhood feeling of family, how did it dissipate? Why do you think that had happened? And as we know, that's happened in many urban areas across the country. But what's your perception of why that happened?
I mean, the main reason why it's happening in most urban communities is because in the 80s, you know, crack was introduced to our neighborhoods, and, you know, it really took away that support unit that was kind of guiding the positivity in our neighborhoods. You know, people talk a lot about generations of people not growing up with parents, but, you know, they don't need to go across the country to India or Africa or, you know, wherever people are going to try to do humanitarian work. Like, it's generations in every hood in Baltimore, I mean, in the United States, that need that support because, you know, whether it be they overdosed or they are in jail or they're dead, there's a whole generation of kids growing up without parents in Baltimore, and it's due to the whole crack epidemic, and we're still recovering.
Absolutely. I just want to say, as I was an urban educator in Oakland, which is kind of a sister city to Baltimore, for a few years, and I feel so grateful just knowing that there's a presence of men like you who are holding the space to be mentors, because specifically the role of men and men of color from the neighborhood is so lacking from so many of our urban areas. So it's just amazing and beautiful what you guys are doing. It's phenomenal. And I guess to that point, when you were growing up, you mentioned that your families were into yoga and meditation and mindfulness practices. I'm also wondering about how was that accepted by the neighborhood? It doesn't seem like a typical childhood for many.
No, we didn't really talk about it outside the house. We like to say we were closet yogis. I mean, there was enough going on. I mean, kids make fun of things that are different for the most part. So, I mean, it was one of those things that we practiced inside the home. We talked about at church because our church community, I mean, was filled with meditators. But, I mean, it wasn't something we talked about outside of our homes. I mean, there were areas where, like, our parents also raised us vegan. So, I mean, there were times where, like, in Baltimore, these things called snowballs where they have, like, the shaved ice and they put, like, the sugar-flavored water on it, the bright colors and stuff. And, like, since we were vegan, our mom wouldn't let us – she also didn't have us eating a lot of sugar, pretty much any sugar, really. So, I mean, we'd have to go to the snowball stand and get the ice and then come back home, and mom would pour fruit juice on it. And the kids would make fun of us for that. So, I mean, we knew we'd probably get made fun of for meditating. So it was just something that was just in the home.
Thank you. So switching the focus a bit and talking a little bit more about the Holistic Life Foundation and how that started, what were the initial ideas that you started with when you had that conversation, the three of you guys, and realized that there was something wrong with the world and you wanted to do something to change it? How did that vision really bloom? And, you know, how did it come to being the concrete vision that it is today? The part of the journey of the Holistic Life Foundation itself, if you can shine some light upon that, that'd be great.
I'll start, and then one of them can jump on. I know we started off, we saw this dude, Matthew Lesko, on TV that said the government had grants to pay for all these different types of things to help you, I don't know, write a book or do a program or whatever, and we decided that we were going to find government grants to help us quote unquote save the world, or, you know, I mean, first our community, then the world. And so we printed up a grant for like a ground level ozone detection system, because I was an environmental science and policy major, so it just made sense to kind of go with that. And we started filling it out, and then we realized that you needed a nonprofit to apply for government grants, because I mean, none of us were like nonprofit management majors, so we weren't really aware of the whole process. So because I was environmental science and policy, Andy was marketing, and Otten was criminology and criminal justice. So the whole nonprofit world was kind of new to us. So we realized we needed a nonprofit, so we went on Google, and we looked up how to start a nonprofit in Maryland. And we came up with a name, we came up with a logo, we came up with our filed all the paperwork with the IRS and the state, and we started a nonprofit. And then we didn't really have any programs going because like Otman said, our yoga practice kind of took over what we were doing. Like when we graduated, we moved back into the neighborhood we grew up in. So we lived in a house that me and Otman's dad and mom owned. So we didn't really have any bills. So our dad was kind of helping us out with, totally helping us out with supporting what we were doing so we could put all of our time into like the Holistic Life Foundation and getting things rolling, getting things started. So, I mean, we had tons of time to practice. Like we would get up at like 4 in the morning. Like each of us had our own separate practice, so we'd each get up at around 4 and practice from like 4 to 7. I mean, we'd do pranayama, we'd do asanas, we'd do kriyas, we would do kundalini, we'd practice, like all these different forms of yoga we were practicing, kind of developing our own practice and seeing. Like one thing our teacher always tells us is be a scientist and experiment with it. So decided to go teach, we decided to see how these things were affecting us so that we could speak about them intelligently. So, I mean, it was mostly practice at that point. And then, like I was saying, like, we saw how much the yoga changed us internally, externally, just on all levels. And so we decided that we were going to move towards the yoga and put the environmental things on hold for a little bit. And then we were provided with an opportunity at an elementary school that me and Ivan's mom was facilitating a program at to coach football. And we decided we were going to do an after-school yoga program. And things kind of developed from there.
Yeah, so once we had that after school program rolling, we knew that we had something special with that first group of kids, and we wanted to keep them together. They're all going to be graduating from elementary school and going to separate middle schools all throughout the city. And we decided we had to keep them together, so we ended up getting a space at a local YMCA, and the three of us would drive out separately to go pick up all of those kids in that first group, so we'd have all keep them together, like it's almost like a team or a family type setting is what we're trying to make. And we stuck with those kids for a few more years until they started getting into high school and getting more involved in sports and girlfriends and stuff like that. And we found that we were losing our group of kids, but we weren't losing them. They're still with us, and we were mentoring them, but we needed a new group of kids. And there's a guy. One of Ahmed Ali's, one of the guys in the neighborhood, right, that y'all grew up with,
yeah,
approached you guys and said to you, you know, I see y'all doing all this work with all these, you know, kids that aren't in the neighborhood. You know, why don't you look at the kids around here, you know what I mean, and, you know, help these guys around here. And it's almost like, you know, the universe kind of just put a whole other group of kids in our hands. You know, the kids are running around the neighborhood and kind of terrorizing the neighborhood and breaking windows and slashing tires and you know, doing all the stuff, you know, little kids do. They get into things, you know, and so we walked up to them and approached them and basically said, hey, look, we got this program. We want y'all to come to Y and, you know, do some field trips and some basketball and some sports. You know, we didn't mention the yoga and meditation stuff just quite then, kind of told them that after we got them into the building. but yeah, they, you know, it just kept rolling from there. We eventually got another group of kids in a local elementary school beside us, and that's where we're at now. You know, we still speak with all those kids. Our numbers have doubled almost in the last 2 years. Every year they continue to double. So I think we at first were serving around 20 kids, and now we're up to a little over 50 at the elementary school because they're right in the school, and it allows them to, you know, attendance doesn't waver as much because the kids come right after their classes, straight to our after-school program. And, you know, I think it kind of just started snowballing. You know, it took it on its own form, and you know, we get highlighted for a lot of the children's work we do and activities we do in after school programs. A lot of times people like to see pictures of kids doing this mindfulness and yoga work. But, I mean, we also hit a large area of adult populations as well. I don't know if one of you guys want to expand on that.
One thing I do want to expound on is, like, another reason why we kind of fell into the work and the way that it's kind of taken a life of its own. It's like when you you know, have a deep practice, and you know, you meditate, you do the Kundalini, do the Kriya, and you know, all that stuff. It just seems like, you know, you things are brought into your life, and you know, if you see the proper path to take, you're always going to make the right decision. And it really seems that, like, once we kind of, like, you know, once you clean yourself up, and you know, you make sure your conscious awareness is in the right place most of the time, then, you know, you can be used as kind of like an instrument to kind of help out humanity. And I really think that that's what we're doing. And for all my nerds out there, it's kind of like being one with the force. You know what I mean? It's just like you're just going with the flow, you know?
It sounds like a beautiful culmination of both your vision coming together and many of the logistical things falling into place. But like you were saying, also just being an instrument to something greater, which is extremely humbling. Thank you for sharing that. And yes, we would love to hear about some of the adult programs that you do. I know that you guys have a senior center and do yoga and mindfulness among adults too. And how do the parents and guardians of students respond to the programs that you do with the young people? So if any one of you wants to touch upon that, that'd be great.
Well, I know for a while, we really haven't been doing too many parent programs, but, you know, because we do train our kids to be able to teach all of the practices that we practice with them, they actually go home, and if their parents are, you know, stressed out or, you know, angry or, you know, just whatever emotion that, you know, their kids pick up on, their kids be like, look, Ma, you know, I learned this in school. It'll help you de-stress and all this stuff, and the kids will actually bring the practices home and kind of change their home environment by teaching the mindfulness, yoga, meditation, breathing, you know, all the stuff that we teach them. And, you know, the parents love the program that much more because they don't even have to come to class. They have teachers coming home to them, you know, so yeah, that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, and from all the, like, the positive changes we saw in the youth that we were working with, so we were dealing with, like, we got most of the kids that had behavior problems, anger management issues, emotional issues. Like, we got all those kids in our program because of all the positive changes we saw in them. We decided that, like, we saw all these other suffering communities, and we decided that, like, we needed to kind of spread the knowledge that we had been blessed with to people in other communities to empower them with tools to, like, inwardly heal themselves up from the inside out. So it was just, we went to a senior center, and we did some programs there, and things went really well. We went to a drug treatment center and did yoga and mindfulness-based programs, and things went really well there. Then we went to a mental illness facility, and things worked really well there. And then we started working with parents and teachers, and things really went well there. So, I mean, it was just, I think the universe putting us around good teachers who kind of stressed the fact that you have to learn many, many different forms of yoga when, I mean, Actually, our teacher always tells us it's all yoga is kind of unified, but people generally kind of classify them as different forms. But learning as many different types of the art as you could, so that when you go to different populations, you can meet them where they are and teach them what they need. Because like when we work with kids, we do a lot of physical activity to kind of burn off some of their energy so that they can sit and breathe, and then we calm their mind down with the breath, and then we kind of ease them on into a meditation. But like when you go into a drug treatment center, people have been kind of abusing their bodies for years and years and years, so you're not really going to be able to roll out a mat and have them practice a bunch of asanas. Like that's not really going to work, so we ease them into it and kind of do a lot more breath work and meditation. And Shravana is like, we do a lot of talks with our students because that's an important part of yoga that a lot of people kind of skip out on. It's like the part for your heart and the part for your mind. So we do a lot with that. And then like when we're with the seniors, it's even more gentle. So it's just fun. Like we figured out, we just saw these suffering communities and decided to kind of empower them. I mean, and the thing that we always tell them, like we're not really teaching them, like we're reminding them, like the knowledge is already in them. It's just people have forgotten. So, I mean, it's just kind of reawaken that within them and then give them the tools to kind of roll with it.
Beautiful. And speaking of the positive impact in these communities, can you share a little bit about the findings of the research done by Johns Hopkins and Penn State about the effects of yoga mindfulness curriculums on urban youth?
Sure. We actually worked with Johns Hopkins, Bloomberg School of Public Health, and Penn State University. Dr. Mark Greenberg kind of coordinated the whole thing for us. He's been a huge supporter and mentor and friend to us for a long time. And it was actually the first randomized controlled trial with dealing with urban youth and yoga. And we got some really good findings from the pilot. We showed that the students that we worked with were better able to concentrate in class, their focus increased, they were better able to handle their emotions, and they decreased decrease their ruminating thoughts. So, I mean, their minds were a lot more clear and focused, and they reduced their stress level. We got such good findings that we actually expanded the study for 3 years through a grant through NIDA, the National Institute of Drug Abuse. And we're actually in the midst of that study right now. And we're actually getting some really interesting findings so far. So we're excited about getting all the data analyzed and putting out, and the doc's putting out another paper on it. Because, we had known for a long time through, like, anecdotal evidence that our programs were working. But one thing Dr. Greenberg from Penn State told us was that you guys got to get some empirical evidence. You got to get some numbers behind what you're doing. Since you are a nonprofit and you're going to have to find funding once you get these numbers, everything's going to change for you. And he was right. Everything did change once we got some numbers. I mean, we didn't really care about it because, I mean, we could look at our kids and see the change in them, but to other people, those numbers are important.
So I have one more question for you, and I think either Amit or Jan might jump in after that too. As you were speaking earlier and you were just sharing the importance of holding your own practice strong as you're kind of guided through the work that you're doing, how has the work with the kids and the community impacted your own personal spiritual journeys? And if each one of you can share a little bit about that, that would be great.
Well, I know one thing that we always say when we're going out on conferences and we're talking about our work or even when we're talking to the kids, we always say to them that they're teaching us. You know, they always say thank you to us and they appreciate all the work that we're doing for them. But we always say to them, you know, hey, man, y'all have no idea how much you're teaching us. And I know, you know, the busy work we're doing, the three of us always constantly running around all the time, it's a rather exhausting kind of workload we have. But when we are with the kids and at that after-school program, I don't want to speak for all of us, but I'm pretty sure the fellows agree with me that it's just like kind of that time of like being a kid again and seeing that pureness in the real self inside these little guys running around and how they're happy and just so carefree and, you know, just so pure. And I think that's one thing that I get out of the kids is just that childhood nature and that childhood innocence that you get, and you see it in them, and it makes you act like a little kid all the time. You know, I'm smiling now just thinking about it. You know, just, you know, it's just a beautiful thing to see and experience and to be around and that energy. And anyone that comes and visits our after-school program, they'll say they walk out and they're like glowing, like they're little kids again, you know, because they can just feel the love and the warmth in the environment that we create.
Yeah, I think for me, the thing that, you know, something that really inspires me and keeps me going and, you know, I guess complements the practice that I have and lets me see the fruits of our labor is, you know, living in the neighborhood where I grew up at and, you know, remembering where it was when I was a child and how supportive of a community it was and, you know, how we were all just one big community. And, you know, then reflecting on after I graduated from college and, you know, seeing it being like the Wild West, you know, the open-air drug markets, you know, Baltimore was bad enough with just neighborhood violence. But when the gangs came in, even though it did, you know, support that population that I was talking about that didn't have any parents, you know, it was a positive thing. The gangs were positive for the simple fact that they gave a group of people who didn't have anyone to love them, you know, they loved each other, you know what I mean, which is a positive thing, but it just becomes negative because they don't have any guidance to kind of point them in the right direction. But, you know, that was one of the other factors that was kind of like messing up our neighborhood, the gangs, the boarded up houses, and, you know, stuff like that, and then kind of seeing our neighborhood as it is today and, you know, seeing, you know, a mom on the block, you know, caring for maybe like 10 other kids from our neighborhood. You know what I mean? That wasn't going down, you know, when we first graduated from college, but now it's going on again. And, you know, walking, like I walk my dogs in my neighborhood all the time. And, you know, Andy, he works out at the local track. So, you know, people ask us questions about yoga all the time, which is very, very shocking because, like, we may be walking around our neighborhood, which is like if you check out The Wire, you'll know what we're talking about. And, you know, people are asking us, like, what's the first step in meditation? Or, you know, will yoga help me stop smoking cigarettes? And, you know, all these people are having awareness of yoga now due to the fact that, you know, we're affecting their kids. You know what I mean? So to me, the whole sense of community thing and, you know, in our neighborhood, we turned a vacant park into an urban garden, a raised bed garden, you know, a park. You know, it's a very beautiful place. Just actually seeing the transformation of neighborhood from where it was to where it is, it gives me hope for humanity because we're living in, like, the worst of the worst. So, you know, if we can make a change, I know anybody can make a change for the positive.
And I think as far as our personal practice, I know, like, throughout the work that we do, like, we stay really, really busy and there are a lot of demands on, like, our time and our energy and, like, just emotional investment. And I think our practices have kind of evolved but also kind of escalated. So, with the time and the energy that we put in, like, it's very demanding and it drains you a lot. So I know our practices have just kind of evolved. I think we've strengthened our practice because we have to take care of ourselves to be able to kind of provide service to everyone. I mean, to the communities we serve and the people we serve and the environment. It's just a lot of service work and just taking care of yourself internally and externally through our practice is something huge. And then I think a lot of it is also working on carrying our practice off of the mat and like into like the walking. But like when we're not on our mat and in those moments where we're in service or things are in chaos or things may not be going the right way, but holding your practice in those spaces to kind of let your light shine through whatever's going on. And, I think those are two huge things. And I know also our practice has become a lot more subtle. I know when we started, it was a lot more of the physical yoga. And then it seems like now, because of time demands and things changing, like it's gone to a lot more subtler forms. Like we may practice when we can't get time on the mat like we want. We may practice a lot more mantra. We may do some some bhakti. Like it's just the other forms that are there and kind of that the universe wants you to learn when you have to kind of change your practice up. It may not be what you want, but it's kind of what the universe has given you, and you adjust your practice to make it work for the situation you're in. And it seems like another thing is kind of recognizing your ego. Like I know one thing our teacher talks to us about is kind of, and other people have said to us too, is just kind of being a vessel and like letting the work flow through you and not putting the I in front of your work. Like you're just a vessel, and the universe or light or whatever you want to call that universal energy is working through you. And usually when you mess up is when your ego gets involved and you're kind of, you're taking ownership of it instead of just letting it happen through you.
Wow. This is Amit. I'm completely blown away. I know that, you know, listening to some of the other farmers, we're just, you know, sort of a chat group on online just to help coordinate some of this call. And I'll tell you that some of the folks that are listening in right now are in tears listening to the work that all of you guys are doing and offering some great questions. You know, I wanted to actually dive back into some of the things that you guys had mentioned early on in the call. You guys said you had a very strong practice, and you guys maintain that. And I wanted to go back to your childhood and just sort of like get some insight into that, how that was a part of your life early on, how you were able to sort of maintain it, you know, considering the environments in which you had grown up in.
I know as far as our practice when we were kids, it wasn't too much, too many asanas and, you know, and stuff like that. It was more our dad would have us meditating in the morning time, you know, after he finished his workout and, you know, all that stuff. We would meditate as a family. And, you know, I guess that would kind of get us in the present and being mindful during the course of our day to going to school and, you know, stuff like that. But, you know, and then them kind of like sending us to the Quaker school kind of reinforced that mindfulness practice because, you know, they have something called Meeting for Worship in Quaker schools where, you know, everyone sits down in silence and then, you know, if the spirit moves you, you stand up and say something. But it's more really about sitting there, being silent and being, you know, being inside of yourself. And then, you know, them encompassing us going to a non-denominational church that is connected to the Self-Realization Fellowship. It was just like, you know, they made sure that we weren't going to miss the whole yoga, mindfulness, oneness, empathy, you know, all that stuff that comes out from, you know, the lifestyle that they were trying to, invoke on us. And, you know, they did a great job because, you know, look at the work that we're doing. They really surrounded us around mindfulness, yoga, eating right, and, you know, all that stuff, which is kind of like the blueprint of what we're trying to promote through our nonprofit organization.
Yeah, and I also think that, like, during the time when our parents got divorced, like, our practice kind of, when you have two parents in a household, like, one person can be doing householder things, the other one can focus on, like, all the other stuff. Like, our mom could be taking care of householder stuff, and our dad could be sitting and meditating with us and working on other things. But when they split, like, they both had to do householder things, so there wasn't, like, all that kind of waned in our practice. And just looking back at it, it seems like there was always something missing from our lives. And I think when we met Andy, I think it was kind of one of those things that we all missed, seeing that there was something missing. And, like, we were asking all these questions, and, like, we weren't happy with any of the answers we were getting. Like, we saw the suffering in the world, we saw all these problems, we saw all this stuff, and none of the answers we were getting really made any sense. And I think it was just that whole yoga and mindfulness practice of going inward was what we were missing, and I think our parents had planted that seed early. When we got back to it, it was like, oh, okay, it was here all along. Like, we were never really missing the answer, we just weren't going to the right place to ask the question. So it was just one of those things where once we got back to it, like, we were wholeheartedly into it, and it just kind of consumed us and took over everything. So, I mean, we definitely thank our parents for planting that seed because it was there. It was just that we weren't looking in the right places for the answers.
And would you say you guys have found some of those answers? Because in some ways, you know, you guys have placed yourself sort of in the depths of an area of suffering or suffering all around, not that you can really escape it anywhere in this world. And, you know, I'm kind of curious to hear how you guys are, you know, you guys say you maintain the practice, but maybe expand a little bit upon that. I know that there are a lot of folks that are on this call that are practice meditation or practice yoga or both, but would be very interesting to hear kind of some of the things that you do both on the gross level and on the subtle level that has helped shift you to maintain that strength.
It was kind of weird because we all practiced on our own when we moved back to our neighborhood, and and we're like kind of getting into our own practice. In the morning we have our own practice, and then after we practice we would kind of all meet up together. And me and Andy lived together at the time, so meet up in our living room and like talk about our practice and just dreams and stuff we've read and all those things like that. And it seemed like all of our personal practice was kind of going in the same direction. I mean, like it seems like the most important part of our practice is just taking that time to go into the light, that whatever you call that God inside of you. Like if you go inward towards it and you kind of let it shine through everything that you're doing and you make that your base for everything that you do, like everything, I mean, everything comes a lot more easily and a lot more naturally. Like you're not struggling, you're not fighting with the way that the universe is pulling you, like, and you clearly see your path is lit up in front of you. So I don't know if it's that we have any of the answers. I think it's just that we kind of shut up and listen. You know what I mean? It wasn't like we figured it out. It was just that we decided to sit and still our body and still our minds to kind of let it shine through us. And I mean, and just through continued practice to let it shine brighter and brighter until it kind of just takes over the whole thing.
Yeah. And to build
on
that,
it's one of those things where like, one of our teachers always tells us, like, when you're praying, you know, you're talking to that source, like Ali was saying, that source, whatever that source is to you, you're talking to it. But when you're meditating, you're being receptive, you know, and it's like when you're sitting there, not only are you being receptive, but it's kind of building up a force shield or aura around you. So a lot of the negativity that may affect people in a negative way or make them act impulsive and stuff like that, you kind of have like an energy around you that's kind of protecting you from the BS of, you know, life. And yeah.
Yeah, and the more that you see that light energy, again, whatever you like to say, whatever you would like to call it, within yourself, then it opens up so you can see it everywhere, within everything and everyone. So when you're going throughout your day, a technique that we've learned in bhakti is to respect everything and to break the word respect down and to use it as look again, re again, spec like spectacles to look. So you look at something, you see its physical form, it's mass and it's energy, and you see it, and then you look at it again, and you see that light within that thing that is the same thing as you. And it's, the more practice you have and the more you're able to do that, it just makes you want to love everything because you're looking at something, and you look again at it, and you see yourself within that thing. What else can you do but love it? It's you. So when you, as you practice more, you start seeing it in every single aspect of everything that's going on in your life and in your day, and you're looking at everything, and you see yourself in everything, then it's just easy to love everything. So like when I was saying, there are these external distractions and scenarios that are going in your life where you might get angry, well, you're going to be less prone to get angry at someone or something if you look at them again, and they're yourself, because then you're just getting angry with yourself. And through the practice and building that up and seeing that more and more, I just think it just helps out just in general, and it makes life just go by so much smoother and so much more calm and relaxed, because you see yourself in everything, and all you are basically is love, is the essence of love, and just being love all the time and loving everything. And I mean, you can't really lose when you're loving everything.
Wow, that's amazing. Thank you so much, guys. I know that there are a lot of people on the call who also have questions for you. So what I am going to do next is start the Q&A.
It's so good to be listening to you, and you know, we can all in our own practice, in our own way, think, gosh, I hope this is helping. But when we hear about how you're working with kids and the difference it's making, the credibility quotient just skyrockets. So thank you for all you're doing. I have two questions. One, really quick. I, and I bet a lot of other people, would love to get a copy of the study and the results that came about as a result. Can we email you to get some more of that information?
Yeah, we can actually email it out to the if we emailed it out to the call organizers, can you all get it to everyone that's on the call?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
All right, yeah, so we'll send you the there's a scientific article from the Journal of Abnormal Child Psychology that some people like. I mean, it explains everything that went on scientifically. I mean, and then there's also an issue brief from the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, which is written for everyone that's not a doctor or a scientist. So, I mean, people usually like reading that one a lot more, but we can send both of them out.
That would be great.
Be sure to just keep in touch with us, too, because we'll be getting results from our second study. It's a larger study, and it focuses not only on the mental aspects of everything, but also the physiological. So we'll just check our website and try to keep updated when we get the results for that study as well.
And also there is a new magazine out called Mindful, and they put a 10-page article in there about our organization and the awesome work that we're doing, great pictures and all that stuff. So I highly recommend everybody picking a copy of that up.
Thank you so much. So here's the real question. In nonprofits, if you tell a good story, people open up their hearts, but if you tell them good numbers, they open up their checkbooks. I would love to know how some of your funders are responding to this. Clearly, if they're starting to take notice, there's some sort of transformation going on in them as well, and I'm wondering if you could share with us what perhaps your funders are saying.
Right now, our major funding comes from an organization called the 1440 Foundation. They're based out of California, and they fund a lot of yoga and mindfulness programs. Because I mean, their name's 1440 because of those 1,440 seconds in a day and being mindful and present in all each second of the day. And they have hooked us up with two awesome program officers who actually have some. They're actually yogis, but they're also business people as well. So I mean, it was kind of a perfect fit for us. And I think one of the things that they've helped us do is kind of, like, we were all about service. We were all about helping and helping and helping and service and selfless service and loving. And that's all we were focused on. But like you're saying, in the nonprofit world, you can't be worried about the stories. You got to be worried about the numbers. So they got us interested in and made us start focusing on developing our strategic plan and developing our marketing and fundraising plan and developing, like, really kind of getting on our board and developing our board a little more and just collecting data on the work that we're doing. And just through that process, like, they've invested in us more, and more organizations are interested in investing in us. Because, we've been doing the same program. I mean, some of our programs have expanded a little, but we've been doing the same types of programs since we started in 2001. At the end of 2001, we incorporated. We did our first program at the beginning of 2002. And things, I mean, it's not like we've changed the way that we do our programs. Just we've changed a lot of the internal infrastructure, nonprofit things. Like, we've kind of put energy into those things so that we can get more resources to help more people. Because, I mean, the three of us can only do so much. So, I mean, it's just working on ways of strengthening up the Holistic Life Foundation so that we can expand and do more programs. So, like, one of the big things we're working on now is, like, a workforce development program where the kids that we started with in 2002 when they were in the fifth grade and the group of kids from our neighborhood that we started with, the first group from my neighborhood we started with, they're all between 20 and 22 right now. And they've got like almost, but some of them have 10 years plus of practice in yoga and meditation and mindfulness. And we're training them to become teachers. Like, they're going to expand our workforce for us because they understand not only the practice, but they understand our philosophy of love and not just love, but unconditional love and selfless service and just empathy and compassion. They've seen it in action, and they model it because it's not something, it's become second nature to them. So, like, yeah, that's one of the big things we're doing is developing our workforce internally. So, I mean, it's been good. And just getting those numbers, is like you said, definitely helps you out in the nonprofit world.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. You can just send out all the information to us, and we will post it on the blog and share it with us.
Hi, this is Vinya. And even before I ask my question, I just wanted to say I worked in Oakland for a long time with children having very severe behavior problems and whatnot. And your call is such a breath of fresh air. It gives me so much of hope, and it's so inspiring, and I have deep, deep gratitude to all of you, and I bow down to all of you. My question is, you know, when it comes to yoga and pranayama and kriyas, these are from the Eastern sciences, and I wonder how the culture, the children, the families, and the families you worked with, how did they receive that? Were they open to learning about Eastern sciences, or did you have some challenges in introducing these concepts to them? Thank you.
I mean, while I do think they are Eastern sciences, I think it's like universal spirituality, and it was preserved over there in, you know, India and, you know, all that stuff. But truth is truth. It has no, you know, color. It has no creed. It has no religion. Truth is truth. And if something makes sense, you know, people gravitate to it. And that's what our kids did. They felt the benefits of this ancient science. And, you know, they just rolled with it, honestly. But universal truths is universal, and, you know,
So they were able to receive it, and the parents were able to accept it?
Yes.
And also our personal practice is a little different than what we teach in some settings. Like when we're in a school, there's certain things that we may practice at home that we can't or could teach in, say, a yoga studio, or we could teach at a drug treatment center that you can't really teach at the school. So it was kind of like creatively integrating some of the lessons and some of the practices, but in a way that it wouldn't kind of scare anyone off across that whole church and state division. So, I mean, we incorporate as much as we can, but, like, there's some things that we just, like, because of like, mantras involved or, I mean, just some of the verbiage, like, you got to kind of be creative with it and just exclude some things that you know would really help. Like, there's certain practices that we have on our own that we know would really, really help the kids that we're working with, but just because we're in a school setting, we may not be able to teach some of those. But we figure out ways around it and teach them other practices to kind of keep them going through the progress.
Okay, and my quick follow-up question is, you know, just like Baltimore, we have other neighborhoods where we have beautiful children who are affected by, you know, gangs and drugs and whatnot. Have you thought about expanding and spreading your beautiful acts to, like, parts here? Have you ventured in that way, or are you having any plans?
We've got a few plans for expansion. We've been doing a lot more trainings. Like, people have been trying to figure out, because the way we teach is a lot different than a lot of other people do, just because I think, like I said, the universe blessed us with some really good teachers. So, I mean, our classes are structured a lot different from a lot of other people that you see. Like, this summer we're going to do a training up at the Omega Institute on teaching yoga and mindfulness to at-risk and hard-to-reach youth, particularly from urban communities. It's June 23rd through the 28th, and it'll actually be up on the Omega Institute website on Tuesday, I think it is. And then as far as just expanding beyond that, like we do programs in other cities. Like, we're actually working on, like, the question a lot of people have is, how can you guys clone yourselves? Like, there's only three of you. How can you clone yourselves to make your work expand? I mean, and we started looking at sustainability and scalability as far as our programs. And we're actually going to be piloting in Minneapolis a program where we'll be going in and we'll be actually be picking an elementary school. The three of us are actually going to do some programs at the elementary school, and then we'll train some of our 16 to 24-year-old youth that are from that surrounding community who may be leaders in the community but might not be putting their energy in the right direction. And we're going to train them to be able to do Holistic Life Foundation programs, yoga, mindfulness, meditation, breath work, like all those things. We're going to go in and train them. And it'll be a three-year program. So by the end of those 3 years, they'll be able to serve their community, and they'll have the best answers because they're from those communities. We're just going to supply them with the tools and the things that they need to be able to help their community. Because, I mean, kids who are doing negative things in their community, they don't want to be doing them. It's just like they're playing the hand that they were dealt, and they don't really have any guidance as to how to focus their energy in a positive way. So we're going to help give them those tools. So we're piloting that in Minneapolis. We're working on Milwaukee. And there's a possibility of Oakland, but, I mean, if anyone is interested, we would love to talk to you about expanding to the city that you all are in.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. And I finally have found Christopher, and he does have a question. So, Christopher, you're on.
Can you guys hear me? Ali, Atman, Andres.
Hey, what's up, brother Chris?
What's up, Chris? How you doing, man?
Hey, Chris. How you doing, buddy?
Yes, yes. Much love to you from India. I'm sorry, guys. I was supposed to introduce you all, but they were doing bhajans outside. My friends were calling, so I just couldn't say no. But I'm
it's all good,
happy,
bro.
I'm happy to talk to you now. And I don't have a question. I just want to share a little bit with the audience about my experience of you all, because I had two privileges. Number one, the privilege to meet you all in person and then participate in your after-school program in Baltimore, which just left me so inspired. You know, you guys are like soul brothers to me. I have so much respect for your level of integrity, your intention of service, and the just incredible, beautiful work you're doing in your community on behalf of the entire world. So really, I just have so much love for all of you guys. And then the other privilege I had was to introduce you to the service-based community and humbly nominate you for this call, because I knew that you had something very, very important to share with this community. So I really thank you for making yourself available to talk with everybody on the call. So I wanted to just share a quick story from my experience participating in that after-school program. And you may have touched on this during the call. And if you did, I didn't hear it, so this may be a repeat. But something that really left an impression on me was the fact that you guys have some volunteers who help you out run the program. And those volunteers are, you know, they're in their early 20s or so, and they used to be beneficiaries of your program. You know, they used to be in your program, they grew up in your program, and now they're helping you run the program. And I just think that's such a powerful concept, you know, that you're really changing lives in that deep, fundamental way and inspiring kids to make different choices, not repeat the poverty cycle, not make the choices that their parents made. You know, it's so, so important, the work you guys are doing. So again, thank you so much. I have so much gratitude for who you guys are.
Thank you, my brother. And we look forward to seeing you again soon, man.
Yes.
And
so
the gratitude
much,
is
yes.
so much. And the gratitude is mutual, because you're doing some really selfless service in all of your travels. So, you know, it's likewise. The respect is mutual.
Okay. I love you guys. Thank you.
Love you, man. Be safe over there.
Okay.
Thank you, Christopher, for joining.
You're welcome. Good night. It's late here.
Okay,
bye.
Hi. This is Gayatri. So I just wanted to say, such an aha moment. You know, like if you expand that, it's like all heroes, Ali, Atman, and Andreas. Thank you so much for being the change for your community and for the world. It's awesome. So my question was, you know, if you could share some moments or instances in your experience where you have seen violence in its eye, you know, seen it in the eye, and if you could change that moment right then and there, if you could transform that moment, were there any instances of that? Also, I'm asking this question mainly because when violence happens, it just strikes you. It's such a blow that you're not able to do anything about it in that moment. And it's generally a process, a long time process to change things, you know. So if you have had any such moments where it was like the instant change, if you could share that with us. Thank you so much. Great listening to you guys.
Ali, if you could share the story about MOOC, you know, and the bikes, that would really, you know, be awesome.
Oh, yeah, it is. That's definitely good. We're going to put that one on the list. But, all right, so there was a group of kids, and I, like, the kids we were working with, the first group from our neighborhood, we had been working with them for a while, and they'd become, like, a close-knit unit or family. And then there was, like, a summer we kept seeing them with, like, like, they all had brand-new bikes. And, like, we couldn't figure out where they would get the bikes from. I mean, a lot of them were living with grandparents, or the parents weren't working. They all had these brand new bikes, and we saw them walking around with like a bolt cutter. So we took the bolt cutter from them, but they still, they had the bikes. And then we see one of them, like with he shows up and he has like staples in his head, and we asked him what had happened. He was like, "Well, I was around the corner, and these kids stabbed me," and these two boys jumped me and they stabbed me in the head with like a knife and a screwdriver. So they stabbed him a few times. He went to the hospital. So then we brought all of them together and we were trying to figure out what exactly was going on. And it turned out that there was another group of kids from like a block over that they were beefing with the stealing bikes back and forth. And they start off with a fight, and then one of them got jumped, and then the kid that was in our program got stabbed in the head. So it was one of those things where we were trying to explain to them like where that path was going to lead. Like even though they were young, they were only in middle school, but we knew where it was going to lead. So it was just one of those things that we had to make them understand where it was going to lead. And then the crazy thing was they were fighting over bikes that none of them actually owned. Like all the bikes were stolen from somewhere else. So. And they were fighting over who had possession of these stolen bikes. And then, so I remember we took the kid that got stabbed around the corner, and we took him to the kid's house that jumped him and stabbed him. And I know, like, our hearts were, like, beating out of our chest. We had no idea what we were walking into, but we knew we had to kind of stop it right there, or it was going to escalate, and somebody was going to end up dead. I mean, and that was where the logical progression was going. So we go up to the kid's house, we knock on the door, the grandmother comes out. We tell her what happened. She brings the two kids out, and the grandmother's response is, "I was the one that gave him the screwdriver and the knife. I told him to go do it." So, and it was kind of shocking because I mean that's what those kids were being taught. Like that was their role. That was their home role model, and that's what she was telling them to do. So it was just like, but we talked the situation out, and with the kids, like we kind of had to exclude the grandmother from the conversation. And it was more us talking to the two kids that jumped the kid that was in our program. And we kind of worked out a truce and like a peace between them that where they were going to stay away from each other. And we explained to the kids that jumped the kid in our program that where all this was leading. Like if it started off with two people getting into a fight, then somebody gets banged, then somebody gets stabbed in the head with a knife and a screwdriver. Like there's only one other place it can go after that. So, and they understood, like, having someone talk to them and we weren't talking at them. We were talking with them. We wanted them to kind of make the conclusions for the situation. We didn't want to kind of tell them what to do. We wanted them to kind of think it through and really understand what they were doing and how they were just kind of destroying their, like, these. They lived a block away from each other. Like, you're going to see these people pretty much for the rest of your life. Like, is that the interaction that you want to have? Is that what you want to, like that negative karma you want to bring to yourself and the entire community, or we could end this right now, and you guys could stop stealing bikes in the first place. So I mean, it was one of those scary situations that turned into a learning moment where the whole, like we had to come from a place of love. I mean, you come from a place of love, you keep your vibe high. Like you can change the energy in any situation if you make sure you keep your internal base and let that light shine. You can change the vibe in any situation. So. It ended up happening, like, it instantly changed, like, that was the end of it, and things kind of calmed down for a while from there.
Okay. Thank you so much. Very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. So, Ali, Atman, and Andres, I have a request for you. I'm not sure if you can, I see that there are a bunch of people in the queue, and I was wondering if it's okay if you can stay, like, 10, 15 minutes over the time that we had initially agreed on. Would that be okay?
Yes, no problem.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. Thank you so much. I don't want to deny that they're all just wonderful questions and we are all learning from it. So thank you so much.
This is Tessa. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hi. Well, it was super inspiring to hear you guys. Actually, I was just at the Wisdom 2.0 conference and really enjoyed your panel, and I remember that Congressman Tim Ryan at some point said, imagine what those guys could do with $1 million. And it struck me that that's always the first place people go, what we could do with more money. And I know it will make a big difference, and you've already talked a bit about that, but I also wonder what other forms of support you feel you need that would be really helpful to you and for the people who don't actually have money to contribute, but who feel really inspired by what you're doing. What are some other things that you need that people may be able to contribute to?
I mean, I know just getting the word out about our programs. Like you, I mean, you may not have resources personally, but you may be connected to someone that does. Like I mean, just getting the word out about what we do, spread the word about what we're trying to help and what we're trying to do. Send this positive energy. I mean, that energy goes a long way. That's another way that you can definitely help out. And, I mean, if you have time to volunteer, if you're local, if you have time to volunteer, volunteer some time. I mean, or if you have anything, like we in-kind donations, like I know right now we're working on getting a bunch of toys for the kids, not toys, but activities for the kids in our after-school program. And we're getting some really good donations, like Legos and crayons and art supplies and board games and reading, like math, and, you know, like they have like those little puzzle books with math and reading in them, like stuff like that. We've been getting great support, and they may not be people that may not have money to give, but they've got old toys and they've got old Legos and art supplies sitting around the house that they can send us. So, I mean, it's just whatever you have, even if it's just love, send that. I mean,
yeah.
All of it's important.
And I know another thing that could help us out a great deal is, you know, for a while, Ali, Andy, and I were trying to write our own grants. And, you know, they kept ending up like English papers. And, you know, you have to speak the language of the funders. And, you know, that kind of eludes us. So, you know, if there are any grant writers out there that, you know, want to use their talents for a worthy cause, you know, that would be greatly appreciated.
Great. This is the kind of stuff that I was really, when I looked at your website, it was really beautiful, and I don't know if I missed something, but I was sort of looking for a section that would talk about, you know, like your wish list, your overall needs. So I love what you just said about the grant writing support, because so many people have lots of different talents and gifts out there, and as you maybe become more aware of what are those different things, it would be great if there was a way to put those things out. Those of us who know people can try to perhaps create some of the connections for those needs to be met.
That's an awesome idea.
Yeah, that is awesome.
Yeah, we'll definitely be putting the wish. We're actually in the process of getting our website updated, so we'll make sure we put a wish list on there. Thank you for that suggestion.
Awesome. Thank you, guys, for your work. Really great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Michelle Ehlers. I'm calling from Santa Fe. On behalf of humanity, I would like to express my gratitude for the work that you're doing. Clearly, what you're doing is having a huge impact. My life has been given to transformational global leadership and global education awareness. I've lived in many different countries. Lately, I've been focusing on sustainability, environment, and personal responsibility for living at the level of interaction with the environment that is sustainable at the global level, not just local level. And I'm wondering, I've seen your website and I see that you're working in the sustainability area also with the kids. Do you know or are you engaged at all with the conversation of the global footprint or what we're using and how we're living in terms of capacity for the earth and how many humans there are? And I'm interested in any educational programs that are focusing on that. If you're doing anything with that, anyone who does connect with people globally at all, or would you like either one?
So I know one of the Otman, Andy and I are huge and we're green, we're really, really green dudes. We love the earth. We're big campers, hikers. We just love being out in the natural environment. And the first thing we noticed was the disconnect that the kids we were working with had with the natural world. I mean, if you ever go to Baltimore, one thing you'll notice is how dirty the streets are, because people use the streets as a trash can. They'll eat something, they'll throw it in the street, and it'll just sit there. I remember one time we were having a community cleanup, and one of our neighbors was like, "Why are you guys wasting your time sweeping up all that trash? Once it rains, it'll just all go down the sewer." And we're like, "Don't you know that all that trash ends up in the inner harbor, in the Chesapeake Bay? That's why the water's black down there." And it's just connecting kids to the environment. When kids are only connected to their neighborhood, that's what they think their world is. They're not connected to the rest of the world. So the things that they see, the things that they experience, the people they see, that's what they think is tangible to them. But once we started getting our students connected to the whole the natural world, Mother Earth, once they were connected to Mother Earth and not just physically, but even in that deep spiritual connection. It's one of those things that they start achieving on a bigger goal. They see everything in the world is possible for them. There's nothing that's impossible. So, I mean, we've started doing a lot of programs around environmental sustainability. We even had one of our students speak in front of the Baltimore City Council in support of the Baltimore Sustainability Plan. We've had a couple of kids that were on an environmental leadership group that won an award from President Obama for the work that they were doing. So, I mean, it's something that we feel is really important and that our kids are starting to understand, too. And they're doing a lot. I mean, We do tree plantings. We do cleanups. We do recycling programs. We make them, and we do a lot around environmental education because kids need to be educated in how, like, yeah, you may not, there may not be any trees where you live, but your actions affect everything. Like, everything you do affects the earth. So if you slightly change the things that you're doing, you can make a positive impact on the planet, and you won't be wasting all these resources, and you won't be killing, I mean, just killing the planet. I mean, we can't really kill the planet. Mother Earth's going to survive, but, I mean, it's just one of those things that they start to see what they're doing, and their actions start to change from it.
Hi, this is Audrey. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much for all that you shared on this call. It's very, very inspiring to hear about what you do and how you live and how you just kind of view life in general. My question was kind of related to retention, I guess, for your program. I was wondering, in the communities that you work with, I would imagine that it'd be kind of hard to have a consistent group of kids, you know, coming regularly just because of all the other things going on in their lives. And so I was wondering if you're, when you're running a program that, when you're running a program on a consistent basis, how do you, I don't know, how do you handle students or kids who don't show up or, you know, not having like a regular set of students or kids if that happens?
I mean, honestly, I know one of the things that we do have a deep spiritual practice, but we're like some of the funnest guys that you'll ever hang around. It's like one of those things, like the kids really have fun while they're learning spirituality and learning, you know, while we tutor them or while we do some sports fundamental training or stuff like that. It's just like, you know, our teacher says, like, you know, one of the closest feelings to understanding bliss is, you know, that pure laughter and, you know, always try to use humor in everything that you're doing because it'll bring people closer to that place, that bliss, than anything else. And, you know, that's what we try to do. We every class that we have, whether it's with the kids, whether it's with drug rehab, whether it's with seniors, you know, we always try to make people laugh and have fun while also, you know, schooling them to, you know, spirituality, breath practice, mindfulness, meditation, you know, stuff like that. So, you know, the main thing is keeping it fun. They honestly, and then with the kids that we're working with, it's like they, you know, don't have that many people who are there consistently in their life. There are some, but for the most part, they're not too many people who are consistent in their lives. And when they see us showing up every day, I mean, it makes their day to have somebody who unconditionally loves them, so they don't want to let them down. It also makes the kids kind of strive to be, you know, positive citizens, because if no one, you know, like they know that if they mess up, they will let us down. And, you know, a lot of kids in most inner cities don't have that. And, you know, with them having that not wanting to let us down, you know, factor, you can see that they really do love us. And I think that's the reason why our numbers are constantly consistent in all of our programs.
I have something related to what Audrey asked. So I just started teaching a 3 or 4 refugee kids, and the biggest challenge I have, like she was asking, how do you make sure they show up? Or in my case, we go to their house, so they seem to be not so interested in studying, or, you know, because I know their English is poor, and if they don't practice English, they won't be able to get a better job. So I'm wondering, what is it that I can do to make them want, you know, how do you make them want something? It's so easy that they're getting attracted to, like, other things in the U.S. culture as soon as they moved here, like buying good clothes and getting on Facebook. And for that, they have learned how to do that. But I don't know how to make them want to, you know, study, because it's kind of a long-term goal for them to have so that they can have a good job. I don't think, like, I'm not as cool and fun as you, but I'm not boring either, so I'm trying to what can I do to make them want to learn and kind of have a goal? So.
Do you mean learn mindfulness or just learn, just study?
Yeah, Yeah, just study. No, I'm not into teaching mindfulness because I think what they need first is to just, you know, learn the language because they're immigrants from Nepal. They don't speak English that well, and they're improving. But I think to get any kind of job, they first need to get better at English and also, you know, do well in high school. And just have better prospects than what their dad has, which is just like labor. So I'm just thinking what it is that I can make them want to study in general.
I know one of the things that works for us is just including the things that they enjoy and including that in the teaching process. Like if you know that they want to be on Facebook or they want to go out and buy certain clothes or they're attracted to certain things, tie your lesson to that. I mean, meet them where they are and make it something that they're interested in, and they'll gravitate towards it. I mean, like, I know for us, I know when we do it that way, the kids have a lot more fun with it and they gravitate towards it. Like, it just makes things a lot easier and it goes over a lot more smoothly with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just relating to them, you know, trying to figure out what it is they like and then intertwining that with the lesson. You know, I know that we've done stuff where the kids have mentioned the cartoon they like, and then we went home and we started watching the cartoon, you know, so that the next time we go to teach a class, we're like, hey, have you guys seen this cartoon? And everyone's like, oh, my God, they watched that cartoon too. Like, of course, we're cool. Of course you watched that cartoon, you know what I mean? Or finding role models in their life of people that they're interested in and they like, and showing them that, hey, look, this is what they did to get to where they're at. You know, it takes work, and it's not all just fun video games and Facebook all day long. You know, if you want to achieve something, you know, you're going to have to do this, and it's going to take steps, but always make sure you're relating it or including it into their recreational activities or role models or wants and desires, so that it is a fun process for them and that they're thinking to themselves, hey, you know, not only is this important, I need to do it, but I'm having a good time and I'm having fun while I'm doing it.
I've been listening to you guys while I'm packing, and it's made my packing so much more inspiring. So thank you. And I guess my question for you is, so I volunteer with a community art space here in D.C. called Bloom Bars. I'm not sure if you've heard of it, but they do a lot of classes with young kids, with adolescents, especially integrating music into their classes, music and dance, as a tool for learning. And they're even going to start a workshop that's being led by this, she's a neurosurgeon, and the workshop is really based on our research about the impact of certain kinds of music, particularly drumming, on heart, opening your heart, on memory. So I guess I have two questions, whether currently your programs integrate music, and if you know, being based out of Baltimore, if you're open to doing some collaborative projects with a nonprofit in D.C.
Yeah, I would say yes for both of those. We would definitely love to collaborate with
Tell them about the Andy's probably one of the best rappers you guys have never heard of. Not probably, he definitely is. So please, Andy, expound, please.
Well, first off, just on the teaming up, we would love to. So make sure you go on our website, or you know, we can email you whatever if you can get in contact with us, and we can have a conference call and try to work something out. So we would definitely love to work something. We're very close to each other, so that'd be awesome. But in terms of the music, we definitely do. We try to incorporate it as much as possible. Sometimes we have guests come over and they bring drum making machines. They teach the kids how to beatbox. And we try to, you know, get the kids to sing or do anything they want to in terms of writing. I know, again, it's just something like we were just talking about the last call, that we're trying to relate with the kids, you know, and a lot of times we go into environments where the kids don't want to do yoga or mindfulness work. They look at us like, yoga? Like, I'm not going to do that. It's lame, you know what I mean? And then you relate to them. We know, you know, like Atma said, I'm agree with him, that we're pretty cool guys. So we know, like, some of the, you know, the recent and latest music that they're into, so we can relate to them and talk to them in that. Or if not, you know, there's been numerous times I've been in yoga class and we're in, you know, older kids, middle-aged kids, and everyone everyone loves rapping, you know. So I'll say, all right, guys, you know, so long as this class goes smoothly, we can have a little freestyle session at the end of it. And they're like, oh, you can't rap. You can't rap. I'm like, all right, we'll see. You know what I mean? And then at the end of the class, we have a little rap session. And, you know, I'm not going to say I'm the greatest, like Ali says. I'm pretty capable, though. So,
he's being modest. He is. You all, if you all heard the greatest, you'll be amazed. Like, he includes, like, all the themes of the Holistic Life Foundation in his music. He incorporates, like, it's real. It's like hip-hop, like you would hear in a hip-hop club, but it's about love and compassion and service to humanity. It's like, and it incorporates all those, like, universal truths in his music to make you have to start thinking and want to go read a book about what he's talking about. So it's amazing.
Wow.
He's being
wow.
You know, Ali, this is it's sorry to interrupt, but there's only one way to find out. Mic is yours.
Andy, freestyle. Give something for him. Andy, do something for him, please. Come on.
Yeah, do something for him. Like, bless these people, man. They have no idea.
It would sound a little awkward without a beat and stuff like that. I don't know if that would come out properly.
Just do it.
I can send them some music. We can only send some music and maybe, like, at one of the beginning of the top.
The beats are in our heart, Ali. The beats are in our heart, so just drop your
song. Just do something. Andy, just give him something. You can give him something written, anything.
Why y'all put me on the spot here?
Because you work so well under pressure, like diamonds, buddy.
Well, let me think of something that'll be kind of cool. Okay, here's
yo. The song that you did with Lloyd was pretty awesome. You know,
I can give you a brief one. So it's something like this. Wow, y'all really put me on the spot here, huh? What's your card? So it's like, I hope I don't mess this up. It goes, I work out all day on tracks I'm dedicated. Family history of depression, self-medicated. I can teach you who you are and how to regulate it. Prescribe the right diet, exercise, and meditation. But I can't make you drink the water. I just lead the way for the fruit to flourish. Gotta flush the weeds away. And I can see it in myself every single day. That's why I go so hard. I know I got to make a change. But the education system keep the lies ingrained. Along with the media, it's hard to find your way. I know what it is. The same time, I want to play to the point where, for real, what you going to say? I used to be worried about what other people thought. The L-O-V-E, that's all the for the people talk. If you want someone to answer, you just got to knock. The truth is priceless. It's something that can't be bought. How about that? It's a little something simple.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So, you know, we use stuff like that. We themes like that, and we talk to people, and again, it's just the buy-in factor. Once you get the kids to see, hey, he's kind of cool, and hey, he can do that, and oh, he's a rap, and then you can relate it to the yoga. You know, you say, look at breath control. Breath control allows me to hold my breath and run around on stage and do this type of work, and their eyes open, and they're like, wow, so yoga and rap works together, you know? So it's, again, about building those relationships and meeting the kids where they are, you know, and again, it's just showing love to them, you know? So music is essential. I always say that love is the most powerful force in the universe, and I say that music is love. So that's it's very powerful.
And another way that we encompass music into our program, there's like this new internet craze that's going on now called, you know, like the Harlem Shake. And, you know, if you YouTube or search it, HLF Harlem Shake, you really get to see our kids practice mindfulness, and then have fun also. So, you know, if y'all want to check it out, YouTube, HLF Harlem Shake.
I'll send the link to it when I send them the research.
Yeah. With all the other links to the mindfulness, you can also send this one, and we'll share it with everyone.
Thank you so much, guys.
My question was about if they would drop the B, but I guess they already did. So I will take my question off the air. And that was awesome, Derek. You are one of the best original artists I've heard. So thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Yeah, if y'all ever want to hear that music as well, please put up for the right
woo! I had a woo to it.
Dharma raps in the house.
Exactly, right?
Thank you so much, guys. I don't want to close this call, so I'm going to hand it over. Afreen, did you have something to say? And then maybe Amit can close.
Oh, I was just going to say Amit can take it away and close it. Thank you for adding a new genre to hip-hop with your Dharma rap. Thank you very much. It was
wonderful, lovely to speak with you guys. And thank you for your amazing work that you're doing. It's incredibly inspiring. I'm going to connect with you guys further about partnerships in Oakland.
Fantastic.
Thank you so much.
Thank you all so much for having us.
Yeah, Ali Atlantis, thank you so much. This what a fantastic way to start the weekend, start the Saturday. I'm personally, I know I was looking forward to the call, but I just didn't realize how blown away I was going to be. I mean, I just want to drop everything and drive to Baltimore right now.
Yeah.
Come on in. We're pretty charming.
Come on over. Yeah.
Yeah, I want to do the same, actually.
Y'all are invited whenever y'all make it out here. It would be our pleasure.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think we all had a lot that we were able to sort of just learn from just your commitment, the presence that you guys have both on the call, but just really in everything that you guys do and the importance of maintaining your practice, that consistency, especially when it's hardest. And those are some of the takeaways that I took from the call. And I appreciate the time you guys even extending beyond sort of the 90 minutes when we usually do this. And so what we'd like to do is, I wanted to give you guys an opportunity if you guys wanted to say anything. Otherwise, the way that we usually close out our calls is we do another minute of silence, but this time we do it in gratitude. Gratitude for what you guys have shared and gratitude for everything that we have. And then we will, I'm going to unmute everyone off of the call, and that way we can just kind of say a big thank you to the three of you. So I just wanted to give you guys a chance to say anything before we do that. If you guys had any sort of closing thoughts or anything you wanted to just sort of leave with us before we get off the call.
I guess the thing that I'll leave everybody with is, selfless service is the easiest way to achieve bliss or to get on that path. So selfless service is where it's at.
Yeah, I think I'd share with everybody just keep spreading love. Be love, spread love, love yourself, love everybody, love everything, and everything else open up.
Yeah, I'm just going to piggyback on Ali's, love is the most powerful force in the universe, and just always see love and be love. And I think just from all of us, we just want to all say that we love y'all and everyone who's listening very, very much, and just thank you for everything.